This is a true story. It's night, kind of late. This would have been 1997 or so. I'm driving my 1996 Nissan extended cab two-wheel drive pickup truck from Nashville to Chattanooga, Tennessee on Interstate 24. I'm on a work trip. It's winter. It's cold. A fine, dusty snow has just started to fall. I see little swirls of the snow in the wake of passing cars. It looks so pretty. Nights in White Satin by the Moody Blues is playing on the radio. I turn it up and relax into my seat. Happy, I'm in a sort of gentle reverie. I'm warm from the truck's heater. I feel the back of the truck start to slide sideways. I react, not really thinking, step on the brakes, hard. Now the truck is spinning. Snow is spraying onto the windshield and completely obscuring my view. It's a smooth, kind of sick-feeling glide at first. I'm on the pavement still, apparently. Then the texture of the vibration changes. The sound changes. I'm in the median now, apparently. I can't see. I can only hear and feel what's going on. The thoughts come fast, but clear. The median is wide, I think, but maybe not wide enough. Does it have a physical barrier in the middle, or is it wide open? Crap, I can't remember. Boy, I hope it has a physical barrier, but it probably doesn't. So, in about a second, I expect to see the glow of headlights through the snow on the window, and then I expect to be hit by an oncoming vehicle. Probably a tractor-trailer truck. There's a lot of those on the interstates around Nashville. And I expect to be dead instantly. I'm sure of this. It's not the only possibility, but I'm sure it is actually what's going to happen. Now there's an odd calm. I'm here. I'm present. This is happening. I can't change it. So I'm just here, just noticing. I'm a leaf floating on a stream that's taking me somewhere. It's crazy how fast adrenaline gets into your system and changes your state in a situation like this. I suppose I must know, in a way, what it feels like to inject heroin or some other drug in terms of how quickly it changes your state. But in this case, it was not like heroin, which I've never done, but I'm pretty sure it's not like heroin. This situation created a heightened state. There was danger that sharpened my senses. There was a credible threat, which sharpened my senses even further. And there was the sense that what I did in this situation mattered greatly. What actually happened, you asked? Well, I lived, obviously. Breakfast the next day was the best meal I'd ever had in my life at that point. The next few weeks, until it wore off anyway, were experienced as just the best weeks of my life. Up until that point, I was just happy to be alive. My truck actually skidded about halfway through the median, the big grass separator between the two lanes of the interstate, came to a stop, and then a very kind passing stranger with a stout four-wheel drive rig and a winch pulled me out of the median. I resumed my drive to Chattanooga much more slowly, much more carefully. All that stuff is kind of beside the point, though. The point is what happened between hitting the brakes during the time of spinning off the road, which could not have been more than just a few seconds, and the first few moments of me sitting in the median and realizing I hadn't and was not going to die. This is an extreme situation, obviously, but it illustrates what happens in experiential learning situations like the expertise incubator. The Expertise Incubator is an online community of practice centered around five carefully chosen challenges and three aspirational ideals. The Expertise Incubator generates really powerful experiential learning results that change you and cause you to cultivate expertise. It is for three groups of people: self-employed software developers, or principals of small dev shops will feel most at home. because they align most closely with the audience I've focused on serving over the last few years. But principals of small marketing firms are also a good fit, and principals of other types of professional services firms that are seeking to differentiate through expertise should also consider this program. You need to have already decided how you are specializing. You probably should have a stable business. You need to want to move into an expert market position using inbound marketing. And maybe you're interested also in the idea of developing unique intellectual property that definitively differentiates you from others. And you need to be able to afford to invest 10 hours a week in working on your business. Even if you're the primary practitioner, the primary service provider, that's fine. You don't have to be like a total owner role who works exclusively on the business. In fact, for this sort of thing, it's ideal if you have a bit of a hybrid role of working with clients, but also working on the business. And you need to be able to spend 10 hours a week working on your business. Let me tell you a little bit about this podcast. First, I do not care at all if you pay to join the Expertise Incubator program. Now, there's a lot of value, of course, in doing so. There's a skin in the game effect and a sort of esprit de corps, a sort of group support element that is incredibly valuable. But I just want a lot of people to get the results that these 5 challenges and 3 ideals deliver. So I'm going to make a lot of my guidance that I would normally just deliver privately to program participants, I'm going to make that guidance available in this podcast, which is freely available online. So in other words, I think it's possible for you to sort of embrace these challenges and ideals and become a sort of member in spirit, a member at large of this community of practice. And if that happens and you don't pay me to be a part of the cohort that starts each quarter, I'm delighted. This is really about more people moving the needle on their careers, not so much about how many people pay me to be a part of this particular program. The podcast that of which this is the first episode was originally a sort of private podcast. It was not listed in the iTunes podcast store. It was created for the pilot group who are now moving through the first challenge in this program. And so the podcast was a combination of me sort of thinking out loud about what the program might look like, responding to feedback from this pilot cohort, and delivering evergreen information about the 5 challenges. Once we got about a month into the first pilot group, things were going so well for them that I made the decision to rework this podcast into a more sort of public-friendly form. So I cleaned up some old episodes, listed the podcast in the iTunes store to make it easier for folks to find it and subscribe to it. So as you listen to this podcast, about 10% of what you hear is going to be a little bit out of context because of this reorganization. But 90% of it is going to be really useful information if you like the idea of these 5 challenges. So on that note, I want to transition to talking about those 5 challenges. First, briefly, though, I want to explain an idea to you, which is central to this program. That idea is the community of practice. This is from Wikipedia, which I'm just going to pull a little bit from their explanation of a community of practice. So Wikipedia says, or whoever wrote this on Wikipedia says, a community of practice is a group of people who share a craft or profession. The concept was first proposed by some scientists in their 1991 book, Situated Learning, and was expanded upon later. A community of practice can evolve naturally because of the members' common interest in a particular domain or area, or, as in the case of the Expertise Incubator, it can be created deliberately with the goal of gaining knowledge related to a specific field. It is through the process of sharing information and experiences with the group that members learn from each other and have an opportunity to develop personally and professionally. Okay, that's enough from Wikipedia. That gives you a little sense of the idea. Let me tell you about Ian. Ian is a client of mine who has developed a sort of competence and expertise in the area of what are often called study groups. When Ian told me about study groups, something kind of clicked because I realize that's very much what I'm trying to do with the expertise incubator. And one of the keys about a study group is that it is for people with quote-unquote lonely jobs. I'm kind of pulling this language from how Ian explained it to me. And that idea, I think, is so relevant or so sort of resonant that as someone who is becoming a self-made expert, your job is probably lonely. It creates a sort of feeling of like, who else is doing this kind of business or this kind of thing? I mean, yeah, if you abstract it enough, there's plenty of people who are running a professional services business. But when it comes down to the day-to-day challenges of what it takes to develop really valuable expertise without the support of some curriculum, some professional organization, or some standards body, you kind of feel like you're on your own. The idea of forming a community of practice is particularly relevant to people who are in these lonely jobs. Entrepreneurialism is another one of those sort of lonely jobs. In a community of practice, there's a real emphasis on sharing what you learn from doing rather than from what we might call armchair quarterbacking. In the expertise incubator, which is, my sort of specific manifestation of this idea of a community of practice, we have cohorts, just groups of people who are working on a challenge together. And those are small. They're capped at 5 people each. We meet weekly via a group video call, and we have some sort of digital connective tissue that takes the form of 2 Slack channels, one that's shared across all the cohorts and one that's specific to each cohort, and then a wiki, which is a sort of living, evolving knowledge base of how to do what it is that we are practicing, which is 5 challenges taken sequentially, not all at once. We spend 3 months as a group focusing on each challenge before moving on to the next. What are those 5 challenges, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. The first one, you will publish something on the internet daily. Every weekday is what I mean by that, although you could certainly do that more often than that. You'll publish something on the internet daily for the first 90 days of this program. After the first 90 days, you're free to decide if you want to continue this daily publication practice or not. The goal of this is to deepen your expertise and your ability to communicate that expertise in the way that only publishing at high frequency can. The second challenge, you will design and execute some sort of research project. You'll spend 3 months on that. It may take longer than 3 months of that, but our focus for 3 months is the ideation, the design, and the execution of a research project. The goal is ultimately to develop something that looks like thought leadership content or valuable intellectual property. The third challenge, do everything you can to line up 3 speaking engagements over the next year. You don't have to execute those speaking engagements during the 3 months of this challenge, but our focus during those 3 months are the activities you need to undertake to line up 3 speaking engagements. There's a lot of flexibility about how you could do this. You could speak at 3 local meetups. If that's a sort of step up for you, great. You could speak at 3 national conferences if that's a step up for you. There's a big difference between those 2 ends of the spectrum. As long as you are putting yourself out there in a speaking capacity, you're executing on this challenge. The 4th challenge, gain power in the sale. There's a number of ways you might do this. There's lots of specific manifestations of how you might gain power in the sale. But you're going to spend 3 months practicing during sales conversations that should already be happening somewhat organically for you. You're going to spend 3 months practicing things that will shift the power dynamic to you, that will let you take charge of the sale. And it's not power for power's sake. It is power so that you can produce better results for clients. The 5th challenge is to formalize intellectual property. So for a business like yours, intellectual property is your expertise packaged and made usable by non-experts. And you're going to spend 3 months on that, using a variety of means to formalize some kind of intellectual property, which could end up as a diagnostic framework, could end up as something you sell or license independently, or could end up as sort of woven into the fabric of how you work with clients. As you go through these 5 challenges, you will be guided by three ideals, three things that you're trying to live up to that are aspirational in nature. No one completely lives up to these ideals at all times. That's fine. That's not the function of ideals. Ideals are not the same things as rules or laws. They are guiding principles. The first is, anything that you create in this program should be good enough to spread by word of mouth alone. Second ideal, anything you create in this program, if you give it away for free, should be good enough that some people would gladly pay money for it. And the third ideal really refers back to the first two ideals. You should be willing to work daily for 2 to 3 years to make ideals number one and two become true in your work. What that means is you're going to start this program and you're going to fail to live up to those first two ideals. You should be okay with that. What you should do is look at those failures, not as failures, but as the work that you do to become the kind of person and business owner that you want to become. I'd like to talk a little bit about experiential learning, because that's so central to this program, how it's designed, how it works, what it is, and more importantly, what it is not. So this program is, make no mistake, experiential learning. And in experiential learning, there's an emphasis on what you do and a sort of reduced emphasis on how you do it. In other words, what you do is very clear and prescriptive. How you do it is sort of up to you. So the what you do is inflexible, and there's a natural diversity of approaches and flexibility in how this might be carried out. And because you're not doing this alone, you're doing this with other people, it's almost guaranteed that you're going to share your particular approach to doing it, your answer to how do I do this. The sharing of those answers actually becomes this amazing asset to the community. When you take something that looks more like training or education or a course, those either have a sort of overly abstract or overly prescriptive emphasis on how you do things. And I think that's why they're so, at least online courses, are so actually unsuccessful. The dropout rate, or the rate at which people fail to complete an online course. And I'm just talking about what the course software can see about engagement, which has nothing to do with how this information is actually used in the real world. But just what the course software can see about engagement usually indicates that somewhere around, these numbers are rough, but somewhere around 90% of people just give up on the course. That's not even looking at what they might do with the information or how they might integrate it to their business. And, as someone who has created a few online courses myself, this is such a depressing reality. And I think, the responses to that depressing reality are basically two. You can say, well, it's just how it is. I'm going to make the best course I can. And maybe instead of 90% of people failing to complete it, only 85% of people will fail to complete it, which is, actually kind of a dramatic improvement. Or you can say, I just don't want to play that game. I want to play a different game. And the game I want to play is where a much smaller group of people go much deeper. That's the game that the Expertise Incubator plays. With courses, you have an emphasis on the information, which is, how do you do this thing? And I think they kind of deprive you, deprive you of the ability to own what you learn. And when I say own it, I don't just mean, it sort of exists somewhere in your head that you can access. I mean that it's integrated so deeply into who you are and how you do things. That's the kind of learning that really excites me personally. And I think in a happy coincidence between my preferences and what's beneficial, that's the kind of learning that changes your business and, lets you level up in a really significant way. So with the Expertise Incubator, we've got these five challenges. That's the what. And sometimes in this program, you're going to find, if you participate in it either as, part of the paid cohort or just on your own, which again, I totally encourage you to do, With the expertise incubator, you're going to find that sometimes you have to do something before you understand it. This is going to flat out terrify most people. And if you can trust me, and if you can trust yourself to move through this terrifying moment of discomfort, what you'll see on the other side is incredible. This is why I told you that story about my brush with death on Interstate 24. That's an illustration of what it's like to be in this sort of heightened state that is created by a feeling of risk or consequence and not really quite knowing what to do, but trusting that if you can get through it, something good is on the other side. With experiential learning, learning becomes so much more substantial, so much more like physical and tactile and real. Part of it is because you're thinking about your actions differently. You're not thinking, well, what would I do with this information if I decided to take action on it? No, no, no. You are taking action daily. And as you do that, you're having to make all these decisions, all these judgment calls, and you are feeling like those actions have real consequences. So again, when my truck slid off Interstate 24 in 1997, that's an extreme example of what I'm talking about. And actually, that was not a learning situation. That was just one element of an experiential learning situation. There are three things you need. You need repetition. I didn't have that. No way in hell was I going to say, okay, let me try that again. I'm going to go so fast that the back of the truck starts sliding, and then I'm going to, you know, try something different other than stepping on the brakes. I was not going to add repetition to that situation. To have a situation where you can include repetition, the stakes need to be a bit lower than life or death, I think. You need consequences. The Interstate 24 experience for me had consequences in spades. Too much, though, actually, for effective learning. Like, I don't think effective learning happens in life or death situations. You know, maybe there are situations where you could argue it does, but the kind of learning environment I'm trying to create does not include a life or death element. The third thing you need is a feedback loop that you can control. And the fourth thing, it's optional, but it's helpful. An environment that's simple enough for you to see patterns and for those patterns to not get obscured by noise or complexity. If you think about, you know, the sort of typical lab experiment, that's why those lab environments are sterile, controlled environments, you know, sometimes temperature controlled or, you know, a Faraday cage to keep out external radiation if you're doing, you know, RF radio frequency work or, you know, also you can come up with all sorts of examples of how labs are controlled environments. And that's why it's done this way is so that there's not, there's as little as possible noise or chaos that would obscure what you're trying to observe. So we don't have that in the expertise incubator. This is a bit more in situ learning in a more complex environment. But we do what we can to simplify it and reduce chaos so that you can see the patterns and have those three elements that create effective learning: repetition, consequences, and a feedback loop that you can control. Because experiential learning happens in real life, in the world, in your business, you'll start out with this perception that the perceived consequences of screwing up are huge, are massive. Most people who enter the expertise incubator will be doing things they've never done before. That's exactly on purpose. And those things will bring you perhaps close to something that feels like an emotional or mental breaking point, where you feel like you're so close to the edge of your current expertise that you're going to embarrass yourself or do something that's fatal to your business or your reputation, which your reputation in, you know, the world of services kind of is your business. You're going to feel like the consequences of screwing up are massive and dire. What you will actually find, and I think some of you are just going to have to trust me on this. Others, I think, maybe have had experiences that are similar enough to what I'm talking about, that you believe me and you don't just have to trust me because you've seen it firsthand. Over time, you'll realize that you overweight the perceived consequences of screwing up and you underweight the value of showing up. Now, even if you're kind of nodding your head along with me, that's great. But this is different than actually knowing this in your bones. When you know this in your bones, the way I do, it just changes everything. You start approaching risk much more the way entrepreneurs do, for one. You start trusting yourself the way experts do, for another. And, you know, the only way to really know this in your bones, I think, is to do enough work in public that you push through those, what you thought were barriers, and you find out that they were, you know, just paper walls. They had no substance at all. And what's on the other side of them is an expanded you, a deeper, more powerful capability to cultivate expertise and articulate it. It's so helpful to break through that paper-thin wall that you thought was made of concrete, but in reality was not. It's so helpful to correctly perceive risk, to properly understand risk. And I think that kind of relationship to risk where you really understand it and you're not afraid of it and you manage it rather than react to it. To me, that's one of the core capabilities that entrepreneurs bring to their work. They contextualize risk in a vision for an upside. Sometimes a lot of other people just can't see that vision, but they can see it. And if they turn out to be right, then, you know, they've made a bet and they've really put risk in its place. And they've reaped the reward of managing that risk with the success of their entrepreneurial venture. The Expertise Incubator will help you have this kind of relationship to risk. The upside could be somewhat personal. I think of Bob, who's in the first cohort, and the fact that he told me recently, you know, this is a man who has struggled with writer's block his entire life. It's gone. He you know, it's like this one of these miraculous healing stories you hear that, you know, it's easy to be skeptical about. In 3 weeks, Bob's struggle with writer's block is over. I think of Toby. And now he directly understands how daily publication is easier than any other frequency. Not every day, but there are days when he spends 10, 15 minutes writing and produces emails that are just great because he's embraced the structure and the challenge of this first challenge. I think of Tom, who, again, you know, we're about a month through the first cohort, is reporting that prospects approach him in a mind-blowingly different way. They've been on his email list, and how they show up in a sales conversation compared to people who have not been exposed to his daily publication on his email list is markedly different. It's already changing that power dynamic. And these people, instead of sort of vetting him or testing him, are showing up and saying, teach me, lead me, help me with your expertise. So everybody is having this really interesting, you know, about a third of the way through this first challenge, having this interesting experience of slowly starting to relax into trusting their own expertise and abilities, and also living at the limits of that expertise and seeing how far they can push it. So I don't think I talk about this anywhere on the page where I describe this program at theexpertiseincubator.com, but to me, this is one of the very interesting and very powerful side effects of embracing these challenges, is how they change your relationship to risk. And I think they make you better at understanding what actually is risky versus what appears to be risky, but actually is not. Let me wrap this episode up with a quick recap. The Expertise Incubator is for service providers who want to cultivate valuable expertise. It is a community of practice that is all about experiential learning. The Expertise Incubator is distinctly different than a course or a mastermind because there's a shared focus on these five challenges. Masterminds generally don't have this kind of focus. They're more like, hey, tell us, you know, what you're dealing with this week or month, or let's focus on a problem that's unique to your business. They don't usually have that shared synchronization between the members. This is different than a course or a mastermind because there's a very clear focus on what you do. And there's a lot of flexibility in how you do it. And finally, you directly, willingly, perhaps even eagerly, face challenges that are very intense. And so you end up rewiring your relationship and understanding of risk. You get two results from this. You cultivate valuable expertise, and both as a cause and effect of that, you become the kind of business owner who cultivates expertise as a matter of course.